This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene today. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector globally. Join us every week as we explore what makes the European Union a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world today. Okay, let's roll.
Hey guys, welcome to Breaking Banks Europe. My name is Matteo Rizzi. I am the executive producer. And today we are in one of our Zoom in show. And the country we choose today is Luxembourg. I am with Nazir Zubari, the CEO of The Loft. And because Nazir, you invented the name, I'll let you introduce yourself and tell us what Loft is all about. Nazir, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matteo. Thank you for having me. I guess I did come up with the name. Yes, it's an acronym. It stands for the Luxembourg House of Financial Technology. It was an idea originally spawned by the Minister of Finance here in Luxembourg, Pierre Gramegna, who wanted to do something related to fintech. He felt not enough was being done in Luxembourg, and given the scale of the financial services sector here, felt that Luxembourg needed to catch up with the rest of the world. And so we came up with this idea of building a public-private initiative, which is now The Loft. It's a not-for-profit foundation, and it is really to drive the future competitiveness of Luxembourg's financial services sector with a focus on digitalization and fintech.
Great. Actually, Nazir, you and I go back for a while. You're part of the Pioneers League of fintech, you know, moving from London to Luxembourg. And we at Fintech Stage are quite familiar with Luxembourg as well, because when we started, I believe in 2013, actually Luxembourg was one of the first countries where we actually launched our annual events. And I believe that actually one of the concrete proof that you guys did an excellent job is that for the past 3 years the Loft has been the catalyst of a number of initiatives involving the country, but also linking up to other ecosystems that clearly position Luxembourg in a very shiny place. So I have to say, congratulations, because the fact that you managed to build this ecosystem starting basically from scratch is actually a great result. Bravo.
Thank you, Matteo. It's fine words coming from your mouth. I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
So what we wanted to give visibility to our auditors, Nazir, is tell us a little bit, how you guys have organized your ecosystem. I know that, post-Brexit, of course, there are needs in Europe for new hubs. In which sort of themes you believe Luxembourg can add, specific value, as well as talk us a little bit of the different stakeholders and how the different stakeholders interact, in the country.
Sure. Well, I think starting with that last point, I think that's the real magic source of Luxembourg. As you mentioned, I was brought up, born in London. I started my career in financial services in London 25 years ago, but I've had the privilege to be able to work and live in now 9 countries. Still in the vast majority, in my sort of traditional career within financial services, I was in the capital market space, trading foreign exchange and futures principally. But what I found when I first came to Luxembourg about 5 years ago to speak at a conference, actually, the ICT Spring Conference, the organizers Kamel and Co. very well. I was just genuinely taken aback by the people here. The accessibility to very senior stakeholders, and specifically that these people were quite down to earth and open to listen, to talk, and to want to hear how they could do things better. So when I came here originally to actually set up a bank, but I got roped into sort of meeting with and getting to know a lot of the key stakeholders in Luxembourg. And it was really incredible to find how every single person I met, and remember, this country has 50% of the population here are foreigners. Within financial services, it's over 70%. A lot of the CEOs and MDs of the institutions here are foreigners themselves. But no matter where anyone came from, no matter how long they've been in this country, and no matter how senior they were, nearly every single person I met said, let's do something great for Luxembourg. There's this fantastic belief that people can have an impact on a country. And then when you couple that with the fact that this is now, well, now technically is the largest financial services center in the EU, since the UK have left, the largest fund center in the world outside of the US, there's tremendous capabilities here in order to move things forward. And what I've found is that this has reigned true in terms of the agility this country has. This capability and this drive to people to collaborate and work together is really the essence of what we built at the Loft, what we try and leverage, and how we develop it. We have no ambition to be the number one at anything. I don't care about being the number one fintech center and getting brownie points by being able to tweet about that. What I care about and has always been my background and objective is the drive to change financial services for the better, and that I see Luxembourg as a key place that this can actually happen because we can get things done. And that in itself, through our focus, particularly on what the financial institutions and the key sectors in Luxembourg's strengths are. So we've looked to focus on sectors that have definitive value for the Luxembourg Financial Services Center. RegTech is a core area of focus. Most, if not all, financial institutions in Europe in particular are looking at ways to save money, particularly Luxembourg, which is largely an administrative center. So a lot of capability around AI, big data, cybersecurity, regulatory reporting, and compliance kind of technologies. Payments, I would say that in many ways we're the de facto now payment center within the EU, again, because the UK has left. All the big boys are here, and then we've attracted many, many firms coming over from the UK. And critically, these firms have come to Luxembourg with substance. It's not just about, you know, getting a license and then, you know, not having an office. Many of the firms have come here, set up and have scaled their operations. You know, we've got the likes of Satispay, who are based in the UK, shifted their entire operations here, and many others that have come across. And what's been really interesting recently, even though I have to admit I've not always been the strongest proponent of it, is blockchain. And blockchain specifically within the security sector in terms of tokenization of assets, where a number of these initiatives have really become the fastest growing businesses in Luxembourg, and they are homegrown in Luxembourg. So we have firms like Tokeny, Stoker, like Funds DLT, VNX, and several others, HQLAX, which are really gaining incredible traction in a very short space of time. So there's real change happening in that security sector. And I think given Luxembourg's background, it makes a lot of sense that it's happening here.
Where do you see the challenges for being in Luxembourg? Or is it something that hasn't come across?
Challenges, there's always challenges to being in any center. I think just as many centers, but I think sometimes particularly acute in Luxembourg is talent. Luxembourg broadly in financial services is putting a lot of emphasis in trying to attract more people into the country. There's expectations for quite large-scale growth in fintech and financial services people. We try to do our bit there. We provide now a very powerful recruitment forum using AI that connects across Europe with about 30,000 active job seekers looking every day. We have built very strong relationships and bridges with universities sort of within around a 5-6 hour drive of Luxembourg, including the Frankfurt School of Business. We have a very strong relationship with the University of London as well. We sponsored their main fintech forum for the past 2-3 years. And we really sort of engage with the students there. So we bring them to Luxembourg. You know, we look at these little issues and we try and resolve them. I mean, other problems would be standard, you know, access to finance and capital. I think the strength here is the access to customers. Again, you come here, I'm not in the business of selling Luxembourg. What I do is to really solve problems by connecting people with solutions with people that have challenges, right? Mm-hmm. And the opportunity in Luxembourg is you have very flat hierarchies and you can get in and get your contract signed and your time to cash quite a short period of time faster than anywhere else I've seen. So that's attracted a lot of B2B businesses into Luxembourg.
That's actually a good thing you said this because I wasn't aware of that. But I think people listening to a podcast, you know, I think that will attract some new startups that would like to be part of your accelerator.
Look at it this way, right? When you go shopping on the weekend, you bump into the CEOs of God knows how many financial institutions. It's a small place, 600,000 people in total, 170,000 in the capital, of which probably around 40,000 work in financial services, another 200,000 commute in every day, right? You get to know everyone and you are dealing with CEOs, and if they like your solution, they will push to get it adopted.
Nazir, I think that you are in a unique position as basically the main connector of the country to basically tell us and share with our auditors what do you think were the best move for the countries beside, of course, creating love and hire Nazir, I guess. But what were the best move that the country has made to ensure that, the fintech ecosystem had a steady progress as Luxembourg did in the past? I want to say Loft is probably beginning its fifth year or something? Am I correct? Or fourth year?
I'm just trying to work that out. We officially were incorporated April 2017. So yeah, fourth year.
Exactly, starting the fourth year, exactly. So what are the main... what are the highlights, if you want to, of these past 4 years? Because you have been pretty much witnessing all of them.
I mean, I think a key highlight is the support we get from our board and from our partners, particularly the Minister of Finance. You've met him, Matteo.
Of course.
He raves about fintech, the loft, the fact that he can actually talk about the subject and knows a little bit about it. He's our best sales guy. The phone calls I get from global leaders as a result of him having told them they should speak to us or speak to me is incredible. I could never have imagined that, being in any other country. Likewise, the support we get from the Chamber of Commerce, another one of our main partners, and all the other board members that are really behind us, and they back us and they work with us to make things happen. I think from a broader macro perspective, Luxembourg as a whole has put a huge emphasis on digitalization. They have a 2050 plan they're working towards, and you're seeing a huge emphasis across a number of sectors for SMEs and young startups. The other notable sector that is really blossoming in Luxembourg is space technology, space tech. They recently just set up their National Space Agency in Luxembourg. The joke that they always make is that they own more up there than they do on Earth, right? So they collaborate with NASA. Many of the prominent startups from the US actually now have bases in Luxembourg. And so that's helping to drive it forward. That's real high tech, So the research centers as well drive a lot of good R&D in Luxembourg. So, yeah, I think there's just been this general country push to develop and to understand that, you're not going to get anywhere by looking at the past or standing still and looking at today. You're going to miss tomorrow. And Luxembourg is really trying to move forward and to embrace tomorrow. I think one last point on that, I think that's critical, is that the Prime Minister, Xavier Bettel, has been, since he was elected to office in his first term, he is the Minister for Digital, right? That's the Prime Minister. So that's a big deal.
Absolutely. And by the way, that's, since you're talking about digital, I want to leap into the digital inclusion. I know that you guys have been also at the center of various initiatives involving financial inclusion, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, again, Luxembourg keeps itself to itself, but what a lot of people don't know is that Luxembourg is the center for microfinance in the European Union. 50% of microfinance business and the funds are all based in Luxembourg. And there's a huge emphasis on financial inclusion and the SDGs generally in Luxembourg. So we've now run three programs on financial inclusion. We call it Catapult Financial Inclusion Africa. The most recent was just this past month at the beginning of February, and it was tremendous. We learn a lot from the people that participate. We had 13 incredible firms that came over that are targeting and doing good in Africa. And it's just phenomenal to see. And we feel and believe that we're adding value. I mean, from the evidence we have from the previous cohorts and how they've gone on to great success, and they are still willing to point back and say that we helped with that, it gives us tremendous pride. And we're very grateful, obviously, to, again, the government, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs here that have now sponsored this program for the next 3 years, including delivering a special edition at the World Expo in Dubai. Touch wood, that goes ahead early next year as well.
How many people do work at the foundation now?
Including myself, there's 11 of us.
And how do you manage those resources when you have to do so many things, you know?
Again, it's my team.
Juggle so many balls, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have an incredible team. I mean, my job is easy made easy by hiring very, very smart people, and they're incredibly motivated and energized. They work very hard. We're structured broadly around three core teams: operations, marketing, and ecosystem development. We also have a research person as well now who's just come on board, so that we'll be publishing some more white papers. But everything we do, again, is about this collaborative effort. We work very closely with the finance associations, the fund association, the insurance association, the chamber of commerce, the microfinance association. We're always working with other people. So the team that is doing anything in particular is always much larger because we're collaborating.
Is there something you sense from, you know, talking to so many CEOs and that will have a bigger emphasis in 2020 with your team? You know, of all the subjects, insurance, all the subjects we had, RegTech, wealth tech.
It's really quite simple. I mean, and it's only gotten worse now given the current dynamic in the world. The European banking has not been in great shape for quite a while. The Italian banks are in particularly bad shape if you look at their non-performing loans relative to their core equity. I mean, no banks are doing great. None of the European banks are doing great. The average return on tangible equity of a European bank was about 6.2%, and that was a few months ago. And can you imagine what is happening now? It's a dire situation. Given that, and we've done a few initiatives around this, but you know, a typical bank procurement cycle in most European countries still averages about 2.5 years, which is not agile or fast enough. Basically, they're killing themselves. The only long-term sustainable solution for their efficiency and future competitiveness has to be technology, given that the pressures that they're facing in terms of regulatory costs, in terms of monetary policy, and now with this virus, in terms of their revenue sources as well. They have to cut costs. So where I see the big emphasis is basically in efficiency tools. We will see even more focus on these RegTech tools, which can drive further cost reduction in these institutions. Otherwise, I mean, as I said, I would place a lot of money that we'll see some major financial institutions going bust in the next few months. Let's put it that way. And the ones that survive are only going to survive by using good, cost-efficient technology to help drive their P&L.
And the faster, the better.
Exactly.
Nazir, thank you very much. We are about to wrap up this first half of the show. Thank you for being with us. I am very affectionate to the Luxembourg ecosystem because it is like one of the jewels that I had the privilege to see growing up from the beginning, and I think that you played an extremely important role to its growth. Thank you, Nazir, for being with us.
Thanks.
Do you want to be part of Breaking Banks Europe? Reach out and learn more about the opportunity to be featured in one of our shows. With over 1.6 million listeners and counting, Breaking Banks Europe is bound to become the place to advance critical dialogue in Europe and the UK fintech scene. Reach out on Instagram or Twitter at Breaking Banks EU or go to www.provoke.fm.
Hey guys, welcome back to our Zoom in to Luxembourg ecosystem. We just had the first half of the show with Nazir. And now Spiros and I are here with Jonathan Prince. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hi, gentlemen. Wonderful to be with you.
So, John, you know, you and I go back like years. I believe at least, you know, the first fintech stage 5 or 6 years ago. I had the pleasure to meet you. You have been wearing different hats in the past 7 years. Tell us a little bit, you know, what you do, what technologies the company you recently founded does, and so forth.
Yeah, in fact, we met, the first time we met was probably 8 years ago. We were part of the Accenture Innovation Awards for Financial Services. You were there for Swift Inner Tribe, if I recall.
True.
But we just had launched DigiCash, in fact, at that time. And so, indeed, I'm one of the co-founders of Finology, together with my three business partners. We launched this company in August 2017 here in Luxembourg. It's a RegTech startup, and we run a trusted fintech platform that basically simplifies connectivity between financial services professionals and institutional players on one side, and a variety of fintech solution providers on the other side. So in a nutshell, financial institutions can easily source and implement these APIs and components that have been previously verified by Finology, as we're a PFS player. So we're also a regulated entity. And we provide tools that help our clients to basically enhance customer experiences and business processes, ID, document validation, video chat, electronic signatures, access to bank accounts, other payment modules. So, yeah, various things that either develop ourselves or we aggregate from third-party providers across Europe, basically. And we have also two other companies. You're absolutely right to say that we've been around for a while. The first one was incorporated in 2006, Mpulse, and it's a telecom messaging, routing, and micropayment specialist. We handle over 90% of micropayments in partnership with the telecom operators and also all the messaging, so all the high-end routing in the country. And in 2012, we co-founded DigiCash Payments, got a full EU payment institution license. It became Luxembourg Bank's mobile payment product with 5 issuing banks, and currently over 20% of the population is using the app. And in fact, we made our first major exit when DigiCash was acquired by Payconiq, which is backed by ING and KBC. In August 2017. So basically, 3 weeks later, we launched Finology.
That's great. Sounds like you guys are full of ideas and never tired of building companies, which is great. And it's exactly the reason why you're sitting there. So, Jonathan, how is it, you know, to build a startup in a country like Luxembourg? Because I always make the comparison with Israel, right? So nobody builds a startup to be in Israel, no matter how, you know, smart, enhanced, you know, like a typically cybersecurity startup, you always build it for the other customers. Like, it seems like Luxembourg is kind of the same, but what are the peculiarities here?
If we focus on fintech, we've got to look at also a bit of the context. So Luxembourg is obviously one of the largest financial centers in the world, around 140 financial institutions. So it's big, but it is mainly around the fund industry. This is huge in Luxembourg. Also very big when it comes to life insurance and wealth management, especially targeting the ultra high net worth individuals. But mainly it was considered as back office financial center. And then the government embraced innovation around e-money 10 years ago, around 10 years ago. So that was probably the first step to becoming an important fintech hub in Europe. And the government put it high on its agenda. So they also supported startups, initiatives like that with subsidies. They created the Loft. You had Nasir with you earlier. So that was around 4 years ago. Basically, I think that what we've seen over the past 10 years is indeed more and more tools, more and more platforms to help startups grow. With DigiCash back in 2012, there were probably less than 20 startups in the country. And now, if you look at after 2 or 3 years of the Loft, it's almost 200 startups. So it's growing, it's booming. And I think that indeed, the key elements there is the proximity with the decision makers. And I must say that the government organized it in the sense that they relied first on Luxembourg for Finance, that you know quite well with FinTech Stage. Nicolas Maquel played a big role there. They created the Loft, which is dedicated to FinTech. It's also the framework that is helpful. If you look at what is successful, at least in Luxembourg, it's these partnerships between the startups and the incumbent players. So there is this specific license, which is the PFS, which basically enables banks and insurance companies to outsource to these players who themselves regulated and supervised by the regulator. So it makes it so much easier and straightforward to outsource to them. So that is an important aspect also. That's why we, after having the payment institution license process back in 2012 with DigiCash, we, in 2017, when we launched Finology, we said we'd go for that. Very structuring. It's a big asset.
Jonathan, is your business still very much Luxembourg focused in terms of client base, you know, or is it there's enough to do there, you know?
Yeah, it's a very good question. In fact, there is it's a fantastic market. So indeed, we started with Finology. We started mainly in Luxembourg. So one of the products, one of the APIs that we focused on for the past 2.5 years, 3 years, was a PSD2 API compliant solution. So basically providing this solution to banks who were falling in the scope of PSD2. And we onboarded 32 banks in 9 different countries. They have a link with Luxembourg. Either they have their headquarters in Luxembourg or they have a partner being the IT provider or the software providers in Luxembourg. And now we've started to also deploy our solutions outside Luxembourg without a link, direct link to Luxembourg. So we've started in Liechtenstein, for instance. We've onboarded already 4 banks. For the time being, after 2.5 years, it's mainly a big focus on Luxembourg. But being a B2B business in which we are, we have to take it step by step and we'll go to where we feel at ease to. I can say that, you know, some would aim at conquering the world with their B2B solutions. But when you look at PSD2, it doesn't make any sense. You have to build this trust link with the financial institutions, with the bank. Want to target a country such as Germany, France, with no local presence, with no strong bonds or players, it doesn't make any sense, even though we're already operating in 9 countries.
Did Brexit change anything? I see that you're expanding everywhere, like Liechtenstein, Germany, but was that on the map?
So Brexit played a role, actually, for us and for Luxembourg in general, indeed. I don't know if it's the positive one, but still it is in that sense that it is bringing more business here in Luxembourg. And for us directly, when it comes to PSD2, there are new players who were actually located in London and relocated to Luxembourg to be able to operate and passport to the other countries, large Chinese companies, large American companies, you know, these big tech companies who also operate in the field of fintech, and they're our clients. We probably wouldn't have onboarded these players if they hadn't relocated to Luxembourg. So it plays a role indeed.
What about the VC market, Jonathan? So I know, you know, in the past 2-3 years, quite a few rather not super large, but very targeted venture capitalists, you know, my friend Pascal Bouvier, just, you know, Middle Game Ventures. But that was only in the past 2-3 years, right? So traditionally, Luxembourg has been a private equity market rather than a venture capital. And so it is certainly easy to approach the few of them that are in the country, but how easy is to get money if you are a Luxembourg startup?
Actually, and you know this market, you know this industry by heart, you also worked in it. And you're right, Middle Game Ventures is started here in Luxembourg 2 years ago. It's true that it's same, a bit the same as I was mentioning earlier. There are quite a few VC firms in Luxembourg, other reasons for the stability, for the framework that is here, but it's not the front office part. It's fairly recent that the front office has, well, basically for a few players, a few of them, I hope more and more, move to Luxembourg. I believe that the Loft is playing a big role there in the sense that they're a go-to for these international players. And as you know, VCs don't really need to have a local presence. They need to be by what the market is about, who are the players. But if you want to raise money, and you know that for sure, you need to create this link. You know, build strong bonds with between the VC and the entrepreneurs, because it's always comes at the end of the day, it's not so much about the business plan, it's more about trust, and that you gain over time. So Luxembourg, I think quite a few VCs are also considering moving, let's say part of their front office to Luxembourg, but for sure they know who to address, where to, just not at the door, and then they have access to almost 200 startups. It's go to the Loft, basically.
So a subsequent question to that is that, so if you're a startup in a country which is relatively small, you know, there is only so many spaces in a given business, given the fact that by walking 3 hours, you can visit the top 20 customers, you know, of the country, right? So, you know, as a startup, as a from Luxembourg, dealing as well with Luxembourg market, I believe that there is also like some sort of grain of salt that needs to be used, you know, in between you guys, entrepreneurs, to make sure that you build solutions that are rather complementary than competitive, right? You know, how do you do this? Or do you feel this? Otherwise, I would be stupid to come and build yet another like payment system when there is another one that has, you know, already the top 10 clients of the country, right?
Once more, there are quite a few financial institutions, 140. They not all be able to decide and to define their own IT strategy or partnership strategy here in Luxembourg. Let's face it, some, you know, headquarters remain, or the decision makers are probably outside Luxembourg. But still, there is space for business. But you're right, you need to build a sort of ecosystem. And for that, once more, the best platforms are the communities that are built around the Loft and going to the events that are organized to see, and their clusters also. The Bankers Association plays a role, so to at least try to make sure that you will have some startup to at least have some voice in the banking community. In the payments area, you were mentioning, It's probably more startups who want to use Luxembourg as a springboard to operate outside Luxembourg. Payments, if we talk about B2C payments, it's not in Luxembourg that it's going to happen. It's a small country. So local market is too small for that. So you need to basically use Luxembourg or its assets to passport your license, to operate, to use it as a springboard to enter other markets. And that's the reason why you have, you know, the PayPal, Rakuten, Alipay, Airbnb payments, all the big players are here now. When it comes to RegTech, then you need to focus on the existing market. The asset managers business is huge, fund industry, but also life insurance companies and private banks. And they are the big players who are going to move more and more. You know, the retail banks and insurance companies have played their role here in Luxembourg, but they're small compared to other markets. It's pure maths. But when it comes to life insurance business and private banks, they're big, they're huge. And they are starting, basically, you know, they're benefiting from the work that was done by the retail banks or insurance companies. And they know now that they need to collaborate with startups because they can't keep the pace of innovation, keep the pace also with all the new regulation and run the business as usual. They have to make a choice. You know, it's always the build or buy. And more they go for the buy and partner with the startup. So I think that there's still space. There's still a lot to be done. It's only the beginning. So startups who want to do business in Luxembourg locally can do it. Startups who want to use Luxembourg as a springboard to go in other countries also will benefit from what is offered here.
Jonathan, besides of your expertise in RegTech and general expertise, privately, do you still have time to think about what could be next? You know, because, I mean, there's only so much RegTech. I mean, of course, a better RegTech solution is always good, but once they have some good solution and they can build upon, that place gets crowded and probably it works for you to have so many other clients and being a trusted partner. But you sometimes, when you talk to your colleagues, they say, my God, if I would start again, I would go now into ... Is there something you came across if you would start again?
Probably not, in fact, because we started very early. If you look, we weren't even talking about fintech. All these buzzwords didn't exist when we started back in 2012. It was basically a startup or a young company trying to sell to banks, right? So now we talk about RegTech, FinTech, AI, whatever, the blockchain and all the buzzwords. And we, for DigiCash and with my three business partners, I think we're now capitalizing and we benefit from what we've done in the past. It was hard. We didn't have all the lingo, we didn't dress how we should, you know, we didn't wear any ties and stuff like that. And not that we were the cool guys, not at all. Our first meetings with the banks, we had to put on suits, ties, and what we were explaining and what we were kind of story telling and stuff like that, that was, well, a different world. And from there, We learned a lot by actually getting the payment institution license. It is very structuring. If you want to sell to banks, if you want to sell to startups in RegTech, you have to go through this process of being yourself regulated because otherwise you don't actually understand what are the pitfalls, what they expect, what they need. Then, for us, it's now that we're actually kind of benefiting from all the previous work, also the reputation. We built our reputation through DigiCash. You know, we built a B2C payment solution. It was the first of its kind in Europe. It got acquired. We did our first major exit almost 3 years ago. And from there, it makes it so much easier. When we go to a bank or an insurance company, we're the DigiCash guys locally. It's true, but at least we benefit from that. And if we have to talk about payments, we seem to know what we're talking about. You know, we've done it ourselves. So the products, the PSD2 API that we're providing, that we were legitimate to provide it. We did also KYC products. Actually, as a financial institution ourselves with DigiCash, we had to onboard merchants. And we had one FT or half an FT to onboard 1,000 merchants in 3 years. So all the process, we built our tools ourselves and so on, and we had to optimize everything to make sure that. So it was based on this experience that we extend it and build a full digital onboarding solution that is used by banks now. And the next projects, where they're already ongoing. So we're building KYC management used for remediation, for other purposes. And this is a big thing. I think KYC is going to be huge in the upcoming months.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge for years to come. It's like government and the government officials. When you have too many, you have a problem. And, you know, it was, I don't want to say cancel, but it just grew by itself. And now there's a normal process through technology to cut back in order to generate profits again. I mean, everyone is needed to a certain extent.
You're absolutely right. It's a matter of cost optimization and the current context, you know, with the virus and so on. I think that now going to a branch to open a bank account or get an insurance product doesn't make much sense a few months ago, but now clearly it's going to totally disappear. So digital onboarding is going to become the new normal.
In other words, it's actually pretty cool to be a pioneer, my dear friend. Okay, it's about time to wrap up. Jonathan, thank you for being with us. Thank you for telling us a part of the story of what I consider to be, you know, one of the poster child of Europe in terms of fintech ecosystems. Thank you, Spiros, for being my co-host today.
Till next time.
Till next time. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Stay safe, okay? And it's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.